afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Monday, February 13th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Oh, my gosh, Al, there's so much stuff going on today. I mean, I just can't even keep up with all the news and all the little interesting tidbits, and hopefully we'll get to three of them today, maybe, if we
we'll get a little more than that.
I hope so. But there's a lot of things going on, and U.S. equity indexes, they hit a record intraday highs again today. The S&P 500's market capitalization, it topped $20 trillion as investors, hey, they're betting on tax cuts that have been promised by the administration. So I thought there was supposed to be some sort of an announcement today in reference to that, or maybe this week sometime. So we'll just see. But in another breath, it comes out and said for the first quarter of this year for collected taxes, it's over $1 trillion, the most on record of the amount of taxes that have been collected. And yet, the government is still short $156 billion, I think it was. So, I mean, it's like, how is it all going to work? And so we'll just have to see the plan, sort of be excited. Of course, we've certainly seen those numbers in the stock rallies since the election back in November. So we had a little pressure on gold today, down 710. 710 for gold today at 1,226.80. Silver was down 13 cents today at $17.90. Platinum was down 13 also at 1,001. And palladium was down 9 at $779. Let's see what the U.S. I mean, the dollar has to be stronger, absolutely. 0.26 at 100.97. Crude oil was down 99 at 52.87. And let's mosey on over to the paper markets today. Paper markets, where are you? There you are. We did have the Dow up over triple digits, of course, with all the excitement of money being spent and taxes being cut. What a world that we live in. As crazy as it is, the Dow was up 142 points to 20,412. I'm sorry, but 1 and 1 just doesn't equal 2 anymore. And heaven forbid if it did, that's when we would have the collapse. The NASDAQ was down 29 points at 5,763. And we have the S&P up 12 at 2,328. The 10-year yield up 0.02 at 2.43%, and the euro was down slightly 0.41 at 106. And I'll just bet you betcha, that the fear and greed index was up significantly. Remember, we were like 59 down in that level, 72. So the greed is coming in strong in this country. So, and of course,
greed is good. That's what
greed is good.
That's what they said. And what was the name of that? Was Wall Street? Was that the name of the movie? They had the arch villain in there.
Yeah, it was Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas.
Greed is good. Greed is good.
We'll see about that.
We'll see about that. But, you know, if anybody reads, not listen, but if people read, and you read, go to various places and just, I mean, the world, it's just crazy with everything that is going on. And the true numbers, I told you before we came on program, I was reading an article. Let me bring it up here. And the title is, Where Have America's Working Men Gone? And this is a UK financial magazine, Money Week. And it says, what has happened? There's a smaller percentage of American men are working now than at the end of the Great Depression. A smaller percentage of American men are working now than at the end of the Great Depression. This is a quiet, catastrophe for those men in the country. And
it's a quiet catastrophe for families. It's a quiet catastrophe for
our country.
Building
it's for
homes, buying cars. I mean, it's a quiet catastrophe for the economy.
Let me. They have it breaking down in different segments, and I think we're going to go through this whole because this really is interesting. The headline is "What Happened." As of September 2016, some 11.4% of American men of prime working age, which is 25 to 54, were defined as outside the labor force. That's 7 million men who are either unemployed or not seeking a job. The proportion has been growing steadily for decades from around 3% in the mid-60s, but the trend has accelerated over the past 20 years. Let's see. It goes on to say, now, what's causing this? A range there are explanations. A few more men are in full-time education. A very few more are stay-at-home dads. Some are former prisoners who find it hard to get a job after release from prison. By some estimates, 12% of adult U.S. men have been convicted of a felony, not including current prisoners. Some 34% of non-participating men have criminal records. That's a lot.
Yeah, I know.
That's a lot.
And those are just the ones who got caught.
Yeah.
Right. It is not a testimonial to the high standard of morality,
but
ethics,
those have left,
values in this country.
But those have been, you know, allowed to, you know, hey, turn in your buddy and we'll let you go. It's easier to get disability benefits.
Yeah.
More men remain unmarried and don't have families to support. Technological advances, the internet, video gaming, have arguably made unemployment less lonely and socially debilitating. No doubt all of these explanations play some part in the trend, but the underlying cause is economics. And what is the root cause? The broader story is about demand for labor, and in particular the decline of sectors dominated by male workers. In 1954, the year when the rate of male participation in the workforce was at its highest, the manufacturing and construction sectors accounted for almost two-fifths of all jobs. Now, following the long-term decline of manufacturing and the fallout from the bursting of the housing bubble, these jobs make up just 13% of the total. And this is what we talk about. This is where our jobs have gone. This is the changing. And it won't get any better when technology continues. At the same time, some key areas where employment has expanded, such as education, health services, and public sector administrations, are those that have traditionally been popular with women. And according to figures cited by The Atlantic, there are four occupations expected to add more than 100,000 jobs over the next decade. It's personal care aides, people are getting older, home health aides, people are getting older, medical secretaries, and marketing specialists. All are jobs where there are currently more women than men. It goes on and talks about why does this all matter? And it matters desperately to the people concerned and to the next generations. A body of academic research has found that the children of those affected are in turn much less likely to prosper. Shrinking job opportunities for men entrench poverty, break up families, and threaten the social fabric. In the U.S., pay for men with only a high school diploma fell by 21% between 1979 and 2013. For women with similar...
That's astonishing.
Yeah.
That's really amazing. 21% decline for people who you say they did have a high school education?
In the U.S., pay for men with only a high school diploma fell by 21% in real terms between 1979 and 2013, and a fifth are unemployed.
Well, it's more evidence that what we're dealing with, when we talk about the problems we're facing, we're not just talking about something that is a simple reflection of Barack Obama or George W. Bush or Donald Trump. These are problems that are systemic, and they have been going on for decades, building for decades. And when this stuff hits the fan, it's not going to be solved. Somebody's going to run for office. I have a plan. You got nothing, fella. I doubt that you're going to see a politician who will have and express a real plan that has any probability of working. It'll be just more malarkey, more BS, as they pretend they're going to solve these problems. These problems are, again, systemic. No one's paid attention to them. Those who have paid attention did nothing about it. People in government should have been aware of this. They should have been watching this all along. They haven't. They're going to wait until the whole thing blows up in everybody's face, and then they're going to come up with some more reasons why we should give up our freedoms, liberties, and whatever chance we have for prosperity. Difficult times.
And this is coming out of the UK. You don't see this here in the state. You don't have anyone talking about, you know, these things. I mean, we mentioned it here on this program. And it goes on to talk about it. Unless this trend changes, we're going to face massive social dislocation. I mean, we're seeing it now.
Yeah.
As well as a giant hit to the economic output and productivity. You hear people talk, the mainstream media talk about our productivity. Now, we certainly can have a boom if there is new construction. This is what this article talks about, what can be done. Well, it talks about new construction boom, and of course with the new administration, the size and hence housing still needs of the millennial generation in years to come. They need housing. The lack of construction, especially of single-family dwellings since the financial crisis, and the potential for a big boost to infrastructure spending under the new U.S. president. These could make a difference. But I think we're too far gone for it to make the type of a difference.
Something
that we
fundamental
need.
Has yes, to be changed.
Exactly.
This isn't going to be changed by a new welfare program or some new, we're going to have a new education system or educational opportunities. There's something else that's deeper, all right? And if you've listened to this program before, you can probably bet that I'm going to link this back to going into a fiat currency. Maybe I will, maybe I won't, but it's something like that. A fundamental change has taken place in this country, and perhaps part of that change is simply we have politicians who cater to the wealthy, the oligarchy. They cater to people who give them money rather than people who merely vote for them. They come around every 2 years or 4 years and say, oh, we really care about you voters, but mostly what they care about are political campaign contributors, which for all practical purposes are actually giving these guys bribes to pass legislation that will allow them to take advantage of middle class, destroy it, and what we're seeing here is evidence of that. When we're talking about a significant percentage of men who can't get jobs, they have disappeared out of the workforce, these are to some degree
it's just not
the middle class.
That is, yeah, it's not a percentage, it's the age grouping. I mean, it's the age where you're supposed to be the most productive of your life, where you're, and this is, they're just being stripped out. And so we might see changes, but here's one more number that I wanted to give, and then we can move on to something else. Who are these working men? You know, that's what we were talking. We gave the age range in the beginning of the program, but they are more likely than working or jobless, but looking. They are more likely than working or jobless, but looking men to be young, black, and from the south of the United States. They're likely to be less well-educated. There used to be very little difference between college graduates and high school dropouts in terms of labor force participation. Now there's a huge divergence. Some 85% of prime-age men without jobs do not have first degrees. And I remember, Do not have first degrees, yeah.
I don't know what you mean by first.
Probably mean like a high school grad, a diploma.
Yeah, I would, high school at least, but maybe even associate degrees.
And associate degree.
Out of a junior college or maybe even a bachelor's degree. It's hard to say, but.
And they are far more likely to be physically unwell. Surveys between 2010 and 2016 show that 44% report taking painkillers daily, and two-thirds are on prescription medicines. By contrast, only 20% of employed men and 19% of unemployed but still looking men reported taking any painkillers. So they're drugged out, getting benefits, very little hope.
Well, very little hope.
For these men.
That's a fact. I mean, whatever's going on here, this is, you know, people think that you enter a society and it suspends what Darwin called the laws of natural selection. Now, I'm not an evolutionist, but nevertheless, there's a certain amount of natural selection that goes on in this world. And some of these people are going to be selected out. They will not reproduce. They will not do well. They will tend to be, you know, it's not the same thing as fighting with lions to see who's the stronger species or whatever, but nevertheless, the forces of natural selection are at work here, and some people are going to be, they're going to be eliminated, and it's one of those things that you can't look at without feeling a certain amount of, you know, I mean, oh my gosh, what is going on here?
Yeah, it really is. But again,
bewildering.
It's bewildering.
It's the sort of thing that just sets you shake your head, and like, as I was saying earlier, there is something large going on here.
It is.
And it's something contrary to fundamental public policy, right? Something is happening because we have embraced a certain amount of lies. We have gone down the wrong path, maybe by accident, maybe by intent, but we have embraced a certain amount of lies, and as a result of that, they are leading us to conclusions and consequences that we don't want to face, we don't expect, we don't want to face, but they're there. And it won't be enough to just increase welfare, right? Somebody's going to have to go back and find out what mistake did we make. Right? We made a mistake in the way we think. We made a mistake in our values. We did something stupid, even wicked, and now we're going to pay for that. There's going to be a price to be paid, and we need to look for, not just solve the symptoms, find the source of the problem and correct that source. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival in just a moment. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I'm going to continue with the Mint State 63 $20 gold pieces for $1,330. Again, $35 over what a gold bullion coin would cost. I would be scooping these up by the truckload at these prices, because I'm adjusting my prices to get them that low. They're not being sold at wholesale. I'm still making a little bit of money, but it's just the way the bid prices, the spreads are working, that I can offer you these at this tremendous price of $1,330. So Mint State 63. $20 St. Gaudens. Most of them will be dated in the 20s. Probably a lot of the days will be 1924s, but that's not why you buy these types of coins. These coins provide you with performance, privacy, protection, and they're a great addition to any portfolio. And if you already have them, and you're you can still accumulate them for $1,330. So it's just a terrific buy. If you purchase two or more, we will include shipping costs. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And I sold some of these to I can't remember how long he's been a client. It's been a while, Mick. And his mother, I want to say hello to her. Her name is Annie. And I want to ask the listeners for a special prayer for her. She took a little bit of a fall, and she was out shoveling snow. And everyone will say, well, you know, she's 96 years old, ooh, ladies and gentlemen. So God bless you, Annie. You truly are a golden girl. And I'm referencing the old sitcom, The Golden Girls.
I remember.
And, so let your son do it. But he says you have a hard time sitting still, so, and that's why you're 96. So God bless you. Hello, and thank you for listening to the program for so many years. Mm-hmm. Wall Street, Daniel Tarullo. He was a Federal Reserve official who spearheaded the after the 2008 financial crisis, the push to make banks safer. Well, he's stepping down in early April. And the thing of it is, his term goes to 2022, I believe. So he is retiring early. He's earned the reputation as one of the toughest supervisors of banks. And, of course, the banking industry, you know, most likely welcomed the news when it was released on Friday. So one of the hardest fighters on the Federal Reserve is retiring. And
you're saying he was fighting for stiffer
regulation.
Bank regulation.
Yeah. As the Fed governor who handled regulation, Tarullo often took the lead in implementing new rules and in defending the government's response to the crisis before Congress.
Well, do you think he's leaving because he's just, you know, you have time to move on, or do you think he's leaving? Well, he should have had, do you think he's leaving because Trump's policy will presumably be to deregulate the banks to some degree?
Yes, I do.
He's not going to fight now, with Trump. He's not going to fight that environment. He just says, that's it. I'm going fishing or wherever, go get my get a real job and make some big money in the banks or something. I don't know.
Well, unless he comes out and says, you know, in April he's retiring because he's sick or something, which that has not been released, I would think absolutely. I would think absolutely. There is,
he's been told probably you're not going to be welcome here because we're going to have a different environment.
Well, Trump will get to fill his spot. And so we have Janet Yellen, who leaves a year from now. Stanley Fischer, term as vice chair, that expires in June of next year. So it gives Mr. Trump the opportunity to, place people in these positions of the world's most powerful central bank. So it's interesting, the timing.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just a position that, you just step out of, 5 years before you're, expected to leave. So an interesting, I think, a change, and certainly didn't get any press. But I think it's important. And especially this person who has led the fight on regulation for the banks.
Yeah, I agree that that's something that's necessary, especially when you're talking about these super banks on Wall Street, mega banks. You can't trust these people as far as you can throw the, the Washington Monument. I'm telling you, and it isn't news, it's not an original observation, but you can't trust these super bankers. You got to be crazy to think you can trust these people. They're out to make money, and they don't care how they get it. They do care about whether they get caught, but other than that, they're not too particular about how they lay hands on money. I mean, there have been major banks. Bank of America has been reputedly engaged in money laundering for drug smugglers for decades. Right? Whether the stories are true or false, I can't say for an absolute fact, but I have, it's the sort of thing that's almost certainly true. And it's part of this banker mentality. Hey, you got money? We got time. We can take care of you. We're not really particular. We just want to get that money. And that is a terrible attitude. And yet it is the essential. It's the love of money, which the Bible warns of. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. It doesn't say money is the root of all evil. It says the love of money is the root of all evil. Right? Who loves money more than bankers? It tells you something. There is a point here that some people are going to say is, it's a certain amount of Bible thumping. It's a little bit ridiculous. But maybe there's some value. Maybe there's some point to this. Maybe there is a point here. And they do need to be regulated. And I'm not even sure that a lot of bankers wouldn't welcome that just to keep the crooks down in their profession.
Well, he's only 64 years old. And
just a child.
In 2016 speeches, and after I just fill this and then we can move on, but he did advocate for going easier in community banks. And so there is probably room for refinements in how authorities have addressed risks to the financial system. And he knows that Trump wants to dismantle Dodd-Frank, and he recently warned against backsliding on the considerable progress that has been made. So,
one of the things you can sit back, you can look at it. I really, I'm glad Trump is there, but this is one of the things I disagree with Trump about. And assuming that I am correct and that we need more banking regulation, we need strong bank regulation, assuming that's true, if Trump's going to eliminate that stronger regulation or reduce it, not eliminate it, but reduce it, it points to an increased probability that we're going to see another financial crisis in the near future when the banks, after they listen to Gordon Gekko on Wall Street, when he says greed is good.
Did you Google that?
No, I didn't Google it. It just finally came to me. It's like, you put these things in the back of your mind and it'll come, it'll happen. It's like Halley's Comet. The answer will come around sooner or later, but not necessarily before the program comes to an end. In this case, it did. Gordon Gekko. Yes, that's right. and I didn't Google it except in my own mind.
But
that's, you know, greed is good. I don't know. It's not good. It's not tolerable. It's one of those sentiments that people, it's not uncommon, but it has to be recognized. This is not, you know, blind ambition is not a good thing. And typically, we've seen novels and stories about it going back to myths, Greek myths and Roman myths and the rest of that sort of thing about when people have these incredible ambitions and it blows up in their face. Somebody's got to regulate these people sometimes for their own good. You know, it's like being married and thinking you're free to commit adultery. You really do need some regulation. You need some friends. You need somebody to say, hey, that's not a good idea. You got yourself a good spouse. You got a family. Got some kids. This is not a good idea. You shouldn't do that. All right? And I don't think we get enough of that anymore. The world has turned. We have been turned loose in a way that helps to contribute to this feeling that the world has become crazy. It's in part because, you know, when I was a kid, people used to complain about there's too much conformity in the world, and everybody was doing the same, or at least in our country. Too many conformists. You know, we needed more non-conformity. We needed to be more liberal. We needed to be more free. Well, there might have been a point to that at that time. But right now, it's not completely irrational to suggest that maybe we need a little more conformity. Maybe we need to find a system of values that we can all pretty much agree on, and we know what's right and what's wrong. And it's not just where we know it. We are of a mindset where if other people break those values, or if we break those values, somebody comes in and says, stop it. Not the cops, not the FBI, not somebody from Congress or some government agency. People. All by themselves. I said, that's wrong. This guy is doing the wrong thing. He should be, stay away from him. He's a bad guy. He's doing the wrong thing. Today we just laugh. If he's making money, he's making money.
Well, I think there should be regulation in technology.
That isn't going to happen.
I know, but billionaire Elon Musk. You know, we talked about him and his views. He thinks that we're already living in an alternate society or an alternate.
No, he thinks
universe.
An alternate reality. He thinks this whole thing is a hologram or something like that.
Now this is
one of the things that's interesting. This guy is a billionaire, if I understand correctly.
Oh yeah.
All right, and he's the guy behind. Isn't he behind Tesla?
Uh huh. Right. SpaceX.
And he's driving a tunnel under LA or something because he was upset by being caught in traffic, so he's building a tunnel under the city. Now, it's not just for him. Other people are going to be able to use it too. But
if you're a billionaire.
Yeah, I understand. You know, do we really want people who are billionaires and also able to believe that this is not, the world is not real?
Yeah, but then
who's to know? I can't say. Maybe he's right. Maybe he's right.
To some degree, he is right.
Yeah,
because we do live in. I mean, we talk about illusions that were created in this country with our financial system and everything. Basically, that is an alternative reality.
I agree with that, but he's looking at it a little deeper. He's looking at it as if it were something like a movie called The Matrix.
But it is controlled to some degree, and there is a
control.
Group,
I get
group,
control.
There is
I get
a group
control.
That live differently than most. So I mean, to some degree, it is. Maybe it's not as science fiction-y as you know it could be, but. There is a different reality.
Well, there may be, but one of the things about it is this. Can you maintain your sanity? All right. Can anyone maintain their sanity?
Yes.
If they think this whole thing is an illusion? Right? If I were to sit here, Melody, and I sit back and I say, Melody is just an illusion. She's just some ones and zeros in some sort of a giant computer. She's not really here. I'm not really here. I think I'm here, but I'm not really here. The computer screens, the whole thing is just an illusion. Can you maintain your sanity with that philosophy?
Your sanity is kept by acknowledging the fact that there is an alternative space. It's those that don't recognize it and accept it. Those are the ones that will lose their sanity. Because they can't figure anything out. But once you understand and once you realize how things...
Yeah, but what is the point to it? You know, it's one thing, assuming it were true. Assuming the matrix philosophy was true, that we're all caught in some sort of a hologram and the rest of it. What is the point to it? If it's not real, then what are we getting all excited about? All right? What difference does any of it make? If it's some sort of fantasy, some sort of a digital fiction... What is the value of your children? What is the value of your pets, your house, whatever? It's if it were all some sort of a computer illusion. I just don't, this is not a tolerable philosophy. I do not understand how Mr.
That's not what I wanted to talk about with him.
Well, right.
That's not why I brought him up. But the reason is he's
surprised, but that's because what difference does it make in this hologram belt? We can talk about anything. We can talk about Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd. It doesn't matter. You know, it's a hologram, Melody. You know, lighten up. You're a hologram. I'm a hologram.
Maybe.
You can't take it seriously.
But what he's talked about today, that he came out today and he said humans must merge with machines or become irrelevant.
Yep.
He says, over time, I think we will probably see a closer merger of biological intelligence and digital intelligence.
Yeah.
He told an audience, this is the World Government Summit, a World Government Summit in Dubai. And that's when it really irritates me, is when you see these comments, these thoughts at World Government Summits, going to the White House and sitting there. And I just think to myself, you know, it's just, you know, you have two worlds that we think are, it just bothers me. But anyway, so this is what it's mostly about the bandwidth, the speed of the connection between your brain and the digital version of yourself, particularly output.
So Musk, what's going to happen here when you go looking for a mate, you're going to be saying, wow, look at the bandwidth on that broad.
Huh? Musk explained what he meant by saying that computers can communicate at a trillion bits per second, while humans, whose main communication method is typing with their fingers via a mobile device, can do about 10 bits per second. He says, in an age where AI threatens to become widespread, humans would be useless, so there's a need to merge with machines. Some high bandwidth interface to the brain will be something that helps achieve a symbiosis between human and machine intelligence and maybe solve the control problem and the usefulness problem. So a control problem.
The problem is we can't control people, and we don't need people who are useless to us.
Let's put some.
Hooray! Brave AI. New world has arrived. We're going to tell some of the commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and we're talking about some of the things that are strange, weird, just almost unthinkable in some regards. I mean, we are dealing with problems right now, and real problems, not imaginary problems, not just fantasy problems, real problems that we are beginning to understand and confront right now that were virtually unimaginable for most of human history. This is not, you know, this is not simply, there's nothing new under the sun. Now, there's maybe something new here right now. And we are dealing with this, and how do we deal with it? And it's revolutionary because it calls our own, it challenges our own right to survive, our own need to produce, our right to consume. I mean, when we reach a point all where these, people, they don't need people, are going to put all robots in. What do we need people for? What do we need you? What do we need me for if we have robots that are going to do all the work?
Your children, your grandchildren. It's not us anymore. It's your grandkids. They're not going to need them. They're not going to need them. That's my point. During his talk, he always talks about this. For humans to evolve. It's a constant theme of his talks and about how society can deal with the disruptive threat of AI. And during his talk, he touches upon the fear of deep AI. And he says it goes beyond the driverless cars to what he called artificial general intelligence. This he described as AI that is smarter than the smartest human on Earth and called it a dangerous situation. And he gives the example of cars. He says this is more of an immediate threat now. He says once you have these firms that are developing these vehicles, he says it's going to displace jobs. He said the disruption to people whose job it is to drive will take place over the next 20 years, after which 12 to 15% of the global workforce will be unemployed. So again, this is one of these revolutions, these technology revolutions where it really doesn't help society. It doesn't help the citizens of the country. I mean, when you went from horses to automobiles, it helped people. You know, when things were created and invented, it helped people. This AI, well,
part of the problem is maybe we have overpopulation on a global basis. Maybe it's true that we have overpopulation. We certainly have it in India and China. I won't say that we have global. Won't say that there's overpopulation on a global basis, but there is significant overpopulation in a number of countries. What are these people going to do? What are they going to do? The only way they're going to find any food, the only way they're going to find any food or shelter, they're going to have to steal it. That's what they're going to have to do. They're going to have to go after people with a gun and a club and steal whatever it is because they will have no other way of making food. You're going to go out and what? Compete with the robots? Grow your own apples? The robots will harvest the apples off the tree faster than you will. They'll store them better than you do. I mean, it is a strange world. But one of the things about it is this. When Elon Musk, when he's talking about evolution and he's talking, we have to evolve, what he's talking about is he has spoken about the idea that there are going to be computer interfaces that will be planted right into our brain, and presumably there will be a computer that will be mounted in your brain and you'll have access to it. And then we'll be competitive. He's saying, he's essentially saying, then we'll be competitive with the robots. This is evolutionary thinking. Not revolutionary, evolutionary. This is consistent with Charles Darwin, with the idea that we are evolving from, we were just little amoebas, and then we became, you know, fish, and eventually we became monkeys and evolved into whatever we are right now, primates, evolved into humans, and so on. That's evolutionary thinking, which recognizes us as nothing but animals. We are evolving. We are evolved. We can evolve further, but it recognizes us as nothing but animals, and it's completely contrary to the fundamental theory of creationism, which is generally, you know, treated with a certain amount of disrespect, but the Bible idea that God created man. God created man in his image. He didn't create him as an amoeba who evolved into a mouse or a fish into a mouse and whatever, and eventually a primate, and here we are. If the Bible were true, we have a created man, a created woman, and they have value precisely because they're made in God's image. And you can look at Genesis 9:6, and it tells you why you can't murder a man or a woman. It's because they're made in God's image. That's why. It's a kind of blasphemy. All right. Once you eliminate that, so, oh, we're evolved, then you are no better than a chicken and a Tyson poultry processing plant. You have no more rights than the chicken. You're just another animal, and the only thing that distinguishes you from the chicken is the fact that you might have a gun. And therefore, we have to treat you with a certain amount of respect unless we can get you disarmed. When Elon Musk, when he talks about this evolution, it's an anti-godly argument. And I'm not going to just sit here and say, well, he's wrong and I'm right or whatever. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying it needs to be understood. This is evidence of a kind of spiritual warfare. And the world is captured for the moment by the fundamental idea of evolution, which is that we're all animals, as compared to Bible and creationism, which is on the sixth day God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. We can't be animals under the creation theory. Under that theory, we have value just because we're made in God's image. There is no such value in Elon Musk's notion about we have to strap a computer to your brain in order to make you relevant. There's no value there. The question is, what's your bandwidth? How fast can you think? What's your basic IQ? You know, how fast can you use a computer? No point in wasting resources to put a computer in the brain of a dum-dum. You know, we'll just put them in, we'll save the computers for the truly intelligent. There is a huge philosophical and theological question that's involved in these conflicts and contradictions, and we're going to have to look at these things. We're going to face these questions in the near future. We're beginning to face them right now. And it's not just technology. This goes to spirituality, theology, right? What kind of a world? Who are you? What are you? What am I? You know, just animals? If you are, then you better be tough and you better have yourself a bunch of guns and bullets, because it's the only thing that's going to defend you against the people, the technocrats that are devising these new philosophies and new theologies.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's happening at such a rapid pace.
Yeah, no.
I'm not sure.
Accelerating.
I'm not sure if they're like when you read the articles and things like that. Oh, we're going to have this by such and such a date. Maybe it's not accelerating. Maybe technology really isn't accelerating as fast as what they're telling us to. Sure, we've seen computers get smaller, they get faster, they create more apps, the software has become a little more creative and fun and so forth. But I mean, as far as true technology and the abilities in order to combine AI and humans, you know, that's probably a long way off.
Oh, I don't think so at all. I saw a report just in the last day or two that one of the universities, I don't remember which one, an American university, has assembled the first working computer that is only a couple of millimeters square.
Yeah.
All right? I mean, this thing is... This it's tiny. It's a working computer. It's got everything you need to be a fully full-fledged. It's not a printer, of course, but it's just the computer. But it's there, and I mean, it's a tiny infinitesimal device. Well, I won't say infinitesimal, but it's tiny, tiny. If I recall correctly, 2 millimeters square, or something in that neighborhood, cubic, 2 millimeters, two millimeters cubed or thereabouts. It's nothing. It's nothing. You could fit it under your fingernail. You know, I mean, you could.
Doesn't mean you have the ability to, you know, to combine human and AI.
Yeah, but
there's a big difference. I mean, I think they talk it up big because they want the funding for it.
I think
you get a lot of funding from governments, and that should stop. They shouldn't get subsidies from governments. That should stop. But I'd like to think that it's a lot further off, but I don't know.
When we see these dates and they say, I was reading an article, I don't remember, it was about some technological innovation. I think it involved Bitcoin. Yeah, it was Bitcoin. And they didn't expect it. They didn't expect this thing to take place and really grab for another 5 years. I think to myself, this is going to happen. This is going to happen in 2 years. All right. Maybe three, but not five. Five is too much. This stuff is moving too fast. And I don't think it's an accident that people write stories where they say, well, this thing won't happen until 2050. Oh, please. Everything's moving so fast. They're just doing that to calm you down. They're introducing these ideas to us and say, you don't have to worry about it for another 30 years. See? Bunk. All right? I think they are intentionally extending the time, and they say, oh, it won't happen for another 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. I think they're doing that in part just to keep us calm. Be calm, be calm. It's not going to happen for a long time. No, it's happening right now. It's coming at us right now. And part of the point in all of this is that as these innovations, as they come at us at increased speed, and they threaten our theology. They threaten fundamental philosophy. Who is man? What is man? That's what we're really talking about here. If they have their way, you are nothing. You have no value. There is no reason.
We haven't been anything for a very long time.
Well, it may be that there have been that philosophy has been around, but it's being implemented by technology right now, and the point is we are facing a period of extraordinary and unprecedented instability, challenges to fundamental ideas that are exactly, you know, I can look at this from a technological perspective, and still you can't avoid saying, you know, this is a lot like they talk about end times. We're seeing similarities to that. And what do you do? You have to prepare. You have to think for yourself, for one thing. And then you have to do the best you can to prepare for what may be a very difficult and even painful period. And not just for you and me. Maybe for the world. I mean, however much trouble we're going to see in this country, I don't believe it's anything compared to the trouble they're going to see in India, the trouble they're going to see in China. There are third world countries that are going to be brutalized. They're going to see widespread death. We are going to see, perhaps, widespread poverty, inconvenience, unemployment. Yeah, yeah. But from my perspective, my hope is it will at least stay alive. I think there will be massive starvation, massive unemployment, poverty, death, blah, 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 in third world countries, and it'll be, if they're overpopulated, they're in for trouble unlike anything they've ever seen or imagined. Nothing like it ever before on the face of this earth. So, I don't know, you know, what are you going to do? Who can say exactly? Who can say how far this is going to go? I don't know that things are going to become as dire as I'm suggesting right now, but I understand, but I believe that these potentials, this description is at least possible. Right? It's not completely irrational. And if it's true, you're not going to get the government's going to say, hey, you need to prepare. You're not going to have a job when the robots get here. Right? No. They're not going to warn you about this. This is sneaking up because the whole thing is so revolutionary, so scary, so bizarre. That it's just going to happen. And if you are not taking steps to prepare yourself, to protect yourself, your family, your loved ones, whoever, you're not doing that, you're going to be exposed. So, in my opinion. And you can take it with as much salt as you think is appropriate, but just the same, you better get ready because we are in difficult, dangerous, unprecedented times.
And I think the worst thing a person can do is believe that it can happen here in the United States. You're just denying, and you're living in that alternative universe where everything is fine, and you don't see the other side. So that we started the program with. So if we can help you financially to protect those dollars that you work so hard for, you know, don't think that your investments are safe. Hey, it's great to see that the paper market's getting all-time highs. It's great. But don't keep it there and not protect it. Get it protected while you still have it. And if we can help you, give us a call here at Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188.
Okay, folks, we are about out of time for today, and we will be back with more information on financial survival and the madness that seems to be afflicting the world right now. We'll be back tomorrow. We hope you'll tune in at that point. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer.
Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.